Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by Mobius Strip Press. I am G.R. Mobley. If you go to my site, reclaimingtherepublic.org, you will have access to my content and support documents and links. This is an educational grassroots program leading in restoring the republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again.
And welcome back. We are in the, I guess we're in the downhill slide, because as I said in our previous episode, that we have kind of gone through, I believe, the foundation, starting with the ratification debates and then going into the concept of the scale of liberty and basically the founding principles, to include the definition of American republicanism, going through natural law and just the fundamentals. I mean, we don't get into teaching natural law, but and I'll just share this because this is really important for people to understand. It is a violation of natural law when society, when we allow things that are, I don't want to say unnatural, but things that do not, you know, things that have an adverse effect on society. Natural law is the natural progression of improving the quality of society. Now, the framers clearly, and I'm saying this because I had a conversation with a good gentleman last night after the show and so forth. And I may not have articulated this in the past, you know, in this past cycle. So I want to, and I think it's really important that we understand, you know, because this puts, I think, places good context to natural law. And bottom line, it is this: when society starts embracing things that have an adverse effect on society or the fundamentals of society, then it is detrimental to the betterment of society. It is contrary. It is antithetical. And so, what is it that is antithetical? So a good case in point is you have to understand what is good for society. And the fundamental building block of society, our society, and all societies, is the family. So in other words, if society is doing something negative to the family and or allowing negative behavior in society to occur, then you are violating natural law, because what you're doing is you're subverting the family itself and allowing it to literally go sideways or backwards into a paradigm and into a condition that it will actually be detrimental and allow our society to decay and fail. So what is a good example of that? Well, homosexuality. And if you look at how we've redefined the family, we have redefined the concept of families. And it's a great case in point is, as we, well-founded and a strong family society, started becoming tolerant and started tolerating, we thought maybe it was just a little bit immoral to go and stone and tar and feather, you know, sodomites or homosexuals for their behavior. And so we started no longer enforcing the laws that were on the books. Well, what happens? Well, as we become tolerant, they want a little more, and they want a little more. And next thing you know, they're demanding to be recognized as families, or they're demanding that we allow them to get in the line for adoptions, marriage, and all of these things. And next thing you know, we're having this perverted family being injected and rammed down society's throat. And so we no longer have the fundamentals of a good moral family anymore, where You know, once you start slipping on certain morality, then the rest of them start sliding as well. And so, and as a matter of fact, historically, even Ludwig von Mises points out that every society that has gone down the path of a sexual perversion or a sideways on a deviation of the fundamentals of the Judeo, and I say Judeo-Christian, or the core family of Christianity and the Jewish faith, or the faith of Israel, I should say, where it is patriarchal, where the man, and I say this because most people think that it's about men and control, but I truly believe in the doctrines of those two faiths, that it's not about men being in control. It is about humbling men to serve their family instead of allowing them to not have those responsibilities. Because when you put the context of responsibility, then it kind of changes from just somebody that is the despot or the demagogue that runs the family. But anyway, so natural law is very critical, and it was a fundamental of America. It was in our DNA because we inherited this through Western society. Western society was growing and developing, and the family was the fundamental building block of our society. So anyway, so we covered those things and that the importance of that. We covered the basics. As a matter of fact, we kind of covered the basics through the ratification debates, but we have to emphasize the fact that in constitutions, just like power of attorneys, there's two types. There is a constitution that grants general power, and then there are constitutions that delegate very specific powers and defined powers. And that's the type of constitution we have. We do not have a constitution like Rome. We do not have a constitution like England and all of the rest of the constitutions in the world. We actually do not have a general powered constitution where we give the federal government general powers. So we kind of emphasize that throughout this cycle of information. And I do try to go out of my way to give you different views of how to look at this type of information. We then went through Madison's essay on property to help reinforce the concept that your property is not limited to your home. Your property is not limited to those tangible physical things that you have titles for, that you have in your possession, your cars and so forth. Your most precious property isn't that jewelry. Your most precious property isn't that real estate, isn't that structure. Your most precious property is your liberty. And if you are beginning to realize that, since we have lost our liberty with the advent of government's overreach in stay-home orders locking us down, you should understand that they have stolen from you. You have been robbed at gunpoint because government is coming after those. And they will arrest you and throw you in jail. So we've tried to create context to all of these fundamental beliefs, these principles that the framers had. I also gave you the context that after the Revolutionary War, instead of just, you know, lining them up and killing them and throwing them in a mass grave, which occurs after every communist revolution, we allowed those British loyalists to leave America and go to wherever they wanted. Many went to Canada, some went back to Britain, but they were not allowed to stay here because we recognized allowing, you know, it's almost like if you have a child that is so reckless and dangerous that they don't care what kind of damage they do, you can't allow them to stay in your home. Once they're at a point where they're ready to burn down and kill and hurt other people, you cannot allow, without constant lockdown supervision or those types of controls. Now, that's within a small family where a family might be able to manage that level of scrutiny, supervision, and so forth. But in society, You just can't allow tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of bad players who are doing anything and everything they can to undermine and subvert our liberty. That's what you see today. That's what we will see in the future as the Bolshevik Revolution still continues to gain its footing and control. We're in the throes. I told you that these are initial exercises that they have been exercising. And now they're actually, and it's proven, they are mobilizing. I actually was telling people, and I've been asserting this all the way back since the occupation movement, where Occupy Wall Street, Occupy DC, all these different occupations, people were literally traveling around the United States to be engaged and to cause a ruckus. These become the professional instigators, the professional anarchists that are trying to get the type of outcome out of each of these protests to put fear in the public eye. So the Tory acts were really important for us to understand. You know, when we get to that point, we're going to have to let these people go. We cannot allow communists to maintain citizenship at a minimum. And back in those days, they didn't have the ability to actually to manage those types of things. If you understand that, they couldn't control who was considered a non-citizen and so forth. Everybody was considered citizens, but we have the technology to control and protect ourselves. And so when we come back, I'm just kind of building the build up as we move into these resolutions we're going to cover today. So we'll be right back after this. Thank you so much.
Are you a patriotic proprietor of a business that is looking to get exposure on a fast-growing program? How would you like to get exposure on the only program on the air that provides an actual constitutional solution to all the federal government overreach and encroachments? If you understand the importance of educating the electorate, we would love to work with you in growing your business and revenues while you support the airing of our content on this station. Your support goes to growing the reach of this show and does not pay for elaborate salaries or highfalutin lifestyles. The show is growing fast, and we're also planning on airing the content about Republic Review on a video medium soon. If you'd like to be a part of history and the growth of the most relevant and result-oriented show on the air anywhere in the world, then just email me at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can lock in exceptional pricing and great advertising opportunities. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with Republic Review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as Republic Review. Please read my argument for Republic Review as well as my description of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
Okay, so the number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK or 215-867-8255. Do not forget my three C's when you dial in, and let's get on with the dialogue.
Okay, so we've kind of covered the Tory acts and the importance of not allowing footing for our enemy in America, and they will use the Constitution, as has been proven over the past century. Since the Fabians invaded our education system at the end of the 1800s, it has only been proven that they used the Constitution as a blanket of protection so that they can slowly gain footing. And look, they have full control over so many facets of our society now. And there's way Too many people. I mean, the whole deep state is completely ensconced in unconstitutional policies, unconstitutional government, and their paradigm is to destroy our way, our government, the what the framers had given us, our constitutional protections and so forth. Anyway, we also covered the cod fishery debates and why those were so important, because Madison's proved and showed, or at least he laid it out, that as soon as Congress could start using clauses to expand their roles, and more specifically, the General Defense and Welfare Clause, then Congress would instantly be able to start supposing and growing government to an unlimited amount. Look at what's happened. That's why understanding these definitions and not allowing people, whether that be justices, politicians, or what have you, I've constantly stated that had we not had the Bill of Rights at the time, then we probably would have been protected. However, because of the Civil War, we would have been lost without the Bill of Rights, or I should say what the freedmen had to go through would have been inhumane. And so we would have had to have gone down a completely different path had we not had those Bill of Rights. But the fact of the matter is that, excuse me, and I've got, if you can't tell, I'm still trying to regain my throat and my voice. And no, I've not been going out protesting. So suspend those types of thoughts. Anywho, if you understand why we're laying all this out and why the cod fishery debates were so important and how there was no limit to what government could assume as soon as they convinced us, or as soon as they convinced themselves and America, that the General Welfare and General Defense and Welfare Clause was a power that they possessed when they don't, that is not a power, as Madison stated very clearly, both in the ratification debates and in later debates afterwards. The Federalist Papers became, kind of insightful, so we went through some of the Federalist Papers. We're going through the resolutions, and then we'll be going through the vetoes. But we've already covered Madison's letter to the, Mr. John G. Jackson regarding the importance of understanding that how the states understood the Constitution at the time is the facts. It is the foundation. Don't worry about what he thought and the rest of those in the convention. How they sold the Constitution to the states during the ratification debates is the only thing that counts in defining what is constitutional, what isn't constitutional. That's clearly what he stated and articulated. Because the Constitution is a compact. It's a compact written form by the states, and the states delegated very specific powers. And as a matter of fact, this is exactly what Thomas Jefferson stated. That's why we're going to be going through these resolutions. And the final thing we're going to wrap up with is we're going to dive into, and hopefully in the next week or so, I will be done with my Section 3 of the 14th Amendment article and research. But hopefully we'll be able to get in contact with a lot of different legislators who have just won their reelection, and be able to, have the conversation with them and talk about, what they see, moving forward and how bad this is, and try to get them inspired on taking a stand on the Constitution, something that they should have been doing in the first place. It's sad that we have to be the ones to actually get them to focus on what they should have been focusing on in the first place. So, anyway, let me just state this, folks. If you want to help with the problem and no longer be a part of the problem, probably the best thing you can do is get people to start tuning in, downloading the podcast. And forgive me, I've been so busy, I've not been able to update the podcast page. I will probably do that this weekend or in the next week or so. So forgive me, there's a lot of shows I'm way behind on, but I want you to know and I want you to understand that we need to grow the message. We need to actually start getting out of our current comfort zone and sharing this message with as many people, or especially you, sharing this message with as many people as possible. Okay? So moving forward, I just want you to, you know, be a little motivated in trying to engage in growing our listener drive and so forth. Businesses, by the way, I just want you to understand this. By doing this, we're starting to start holding both government accountable, but we need to get businesses and the citizens accountable. We have a responsibility to ensure that our government is serving us the way they're supposed to be serving us. And businesses, why are they so important? Because they have pockets. As a matter of fact, they have real skin in the game. And as a matter of fact, if you know anybody that's lost their business and they, you know, they're just actually devastated, what the heck am I going to do? You should ask them, well, how much money were you spending on insuring your business from this type of thing? And they'll go, well, what do you mean? There is no insurance. Absolutely, there is. I want you to understand this, folks, that you cannot separate politics from business, because this is the outcome when you try to think you can. Because the progressives have seized control of all of these different seats and have rammed the deep state is throughout the 50 states. Why do you think so many states just caved in violating the Constitution? They didn't even so there's some people that gave it a second thought. But I'm telling you, any governor, like even Governor Gordon of Wyoming, of the darkest red state in the union, he still damaged people unconstitutionally. Excuse me. And so anyway, let me just move forward. I'm going to forego all of the other obligatories. I just want to, you know, place a little bit of context to what we're covering and where we've been. And so now we're going to get into, excuse me, the Kentucky resolutions, which were actually sent out, I believe, October, something like the 27th. And they were actually adopted November 10th, 1798. Now, this was the, you know, the intent of these resolutions, that the limited federal government had very limited powers. They had specific powers delegated to them, and the residual powers were retained and not granted, and the federal government was not granted to be its own judge. So Resolution 1 from Thomas Jefferson resolved that the states composing the United States of America are not united on the principle of unlimited submission to their general government, but that by a compact under the style and title of a Constitution for the United States and of amendments thereto, they constituted a general government for specific purposes, delegated to that government certain definite powers, reserving each state to itself the residuary mass of right to their own self-government. Now, I'm going to stop right there. That right there just guarantees, it reinforces this concept of the Missouri Compromise being unconstitutional, that reserving each state to itself the residuary mass of right to their own self-government. When the government started dictating you had to be a slave state and you couldn't be a slave state, there you go. That took away the state's self-government and it forced it down a path of creating a government as dictated by the federal government. Now, I want you to clearly understand this, that the Missouri Compromise did not occur the day after. It was several decades after. It was under Monroe's policy. I believe it was in the 1820s. So we're almost 50 years into the Constitutional Republic when they actually, you know, tripped over this, you know, compromise. And unfortunately, Monroe did not understand the dangers of what he was doing and the atrocities that were going to occur because of this. And actually what ended up happening is it delayed the correction of liberty in America. America was on a course of correcting this. Those southern states, as I've proven with the three-fifths rule and everything else, the southern states knew that if they didn't start growing in slave states, they were going to lose the argument and narrative in Congress. And they still saw that the Missouri Compromise wasn't doing enough for them because they realized that slave states were not states that were going to be rich in representative resources. It's just due to the fact that they're agrarian and the land mass requires more land for growing food than population and growing people. So anyway, when we come back, we will get back into these resolutions and I will stop editorializing, at least for this point, and going further. We will be right back after these two promos. So please stay tuned. This stuff is gold.
Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org. And let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic.
To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath even though we're not required to take it because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station.
That number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK, 215-867-8255. And again, don't forget those three C's. And if you're ready to call in, the lines are open.
Okay, so let me move forward with what Jefferson is saying in his first resolution here. And what he says here is reserving, I'm going to just repeat the last line, reserving each state to itself the residuary mass of right to their own self-government. And whatsoever the general government assumes undelegated powers, it acts or unauthoritative. I'm going to repeat that. And that whensoever the general government assumes undelegated powers, it acts, its acts, possessive, the federal government's acts are unauthoritative, void, and of no force. So what happens if all of a sudden we stopped complying to these unconstitutional laws? Well, now that they have their own enforcement agencies, they can come and lock you up. This is why it's just nullification is inadequate. This is why what Jefferson was talking about in this resolution and Madison's resolution was not simply nullification. He laid it out there that all of their unauthoritative laws are null and void, or he says void and of no force. But back in those days, they didn't have, who enforced federal law? It was the militia. So they didn't have federal agencies being able to come knock your door in, take you out of your home, and throw you in jail and suspend your rights and everything else. That to this compact, this is going on here, this is Jefferson, that to this compact, each state acceded as a state and as an integral part, its co-states forming as to itself the other party, that the government created by this compact was not made the exclusive or final judge of the extent of the powers delegated to itself, since that would have made its discretion and not the Constitution the measure of its powers. Madison kind of clarified that in the cod fishery bounties, and we can actually see that they don't use the Constitution anymore. They actually use their discretion. They've actually created this thing called the annotated Constitution, which is completely unconstitutional. But moving on here, he says, but that as in all cases of compact among powers having no common judge, each party has an equal right to judge for itself, as well of infractions as of the mode and measure of redress. Now, to be clear, you know, what happens when you have 50 judges off, you know, working independently? You have mayhem, you have chaos, you do not have a consensus, and you do not have unity. This is why Republic Review is exactly what we have to do and what Jefferson tried to do. He tried to pull the judges together to form a jury so that they could come to a single conclusion that these are violations of the Constitution, and that they would then use political force in forcing the federal government into compliance. So the next paragraph, or the next resolution, basically what the general government has been given per the Constitution in punishing crime and two acts that violate the 10th Amendment. So this is what we're going to be covering in the second resolution of Jefferson. Resolved that the Constitution of the United States, having delegated to Congress a power to punish treason, counterfeiting, the securities and current coin of the United States, piracies and felonies committed on the high seas, and offenses against laws of nations, and no other crimes. Did you catch that? So the first thing he does is Jefferson calls out the only crimes that the federal government has jurisdiction over. Having delegated to Congress a power to punish treason, counterfeiting, the securities and current coin of the United States, in other words, you know, counterfeiting, piracies and felonies committed on the high sea, and offenses against laws of nations. So those last two, piracies and felonies committed on the high seas, and crimes against or offenses against the laws of nations, those are external to the United States. The reason that those were included in the Constitution, we cover this when we go through the Constitution, but the reason those two things were included is it could allow the United States to assert its jurisdiction to protect its citizens from evil players in the world. Yeah, there are evil players that, like Russia, they'll just trump up a bunch of charges next thing you know. And so America, we have the constitutional powers and rights. The problem is other states won't necessarily recognize it. However, back in these days, they did have laws of nations, and it was pretty much Western Europe that all agreed to this. But anyway, things have changed, and now we have this insidious entity called the United Nations instead of the Law of Nations, and it is a... It's an entity of avarice and greed that wants to consume and subjugate the world. It wants to consume all power and subjugate the world to it. It's the true face of evil. If you want to look at evil government, I mean, Russia is bad, but the United Nations, China is terrible, but the United Nations is an amalgamation of all the evils that could possibly be listed unto all of mankind. Anyway, whatsoever it being true as a general principle and one of the amendments to the Constitution, having also declared that, quote, the powers not delegated to the United States by the Constitution, not prohibited by it to the states, are reserved to the states respectively or to the people. Therefore, and close quote, to the people, close quote, that which is the 10th Amendment. Therefore, the Act of Congress passed on the 14th day of July, 1798, and entitled an act in addition to the act entitled an act for the punishment of certain crimes against the United States, as also the act passed by them on the day of June 17th entitled an act to punish frauds committed on the Bank of the United States, and all other acts which assume to create, define, or punish crimes other than those enumerated in the Constitution are altogether void and of no force, and the power to create, define, and punish such other crimes is reserved and of right appertains solely and exclusively to the respective states, each within its own territory. So the next one, that's wrapped up resolution number two. The third resolution is this, and basically, just to give you a highlight, what this one's going to cover, this is an act violating the 10th Amendment and the First Amendment. Resolved. So actually, before I get into this third resolution, I'm trying to paint this picture how what Jefferson's doing in each of these resolutions, and if you actually look at it from a macro view, he has audited the Constitution and identified where the each of these acts have violated one form or multiple forms or clauses within the Constitution. So three, resolved. This is bad English. There's probably a typo or this is how they talked back then. Resolved, it is true as a general principle, and it is also expressly declared by one of the amendments to the Constitutions that the powers not delegated to the United States by the Constitution or prohibited to it by the states are reserved to the states respectively or to the people. Again, that's the 10th Amendment, close quote. And that no power over the freedom of religion, freedom of speech, or freedom of the press being delegated to the United States by the Constitution, nor prohibited by it to the states, all lawful powers respecting the same did of right remain and were reserved to the states. Or, so I just want you to understand. Here he's reading the Bill of Rights, or he's not reading it, but he's kind of paraphrasing the Bill of Rights. I want you to understand, because you've heard me say this, that the states have the power to regulate their press. Just want you to understand that only the First Amendment only applied to the federal government. And I'll read it again. And that no power over the freedom of religion, freedom of speech, or freedom of the press being delegated to the United States because what it says in the Bill of Rights, they cannot pass any laws respecting any of these things by the Constitution, nor prohibited by it to the states. All lawful powers respecting the same did of right remain. So in other words, the states actually have the rights to create laws about those things, about speech. The states have the right to, you know, create regulations on the press. They actually establish religions and they could create laws respecting religious expression. Every state banned Mohammedism back in those days. They even banned other types of faiths, I think Hindu and so forth. So the fact is that until the 14th Amendment, states, their hands were tied, or I should say that their hands were unfettered. They actually had the ability, the states actually had the ability to do two things, to establish a church, which the First Amendment does not allow the federal government to do this, and the federal government cannot make any laws. I mean, the press is free, but the states can actually regulate the press, and These resolutions actually prove that, which is what I was saying to Eric. We'll be right back after these two promos.
I've been on the radio for a couple of years, and for over a decade, I have been providing content to help patriots understand what has to be done if we're going to save our Constitution and our Republic. Not one academic has been able to refute my argument for Republic Review, and even most conservative entertainers will not support Republic Review due to self-interest reasons. If you have not read my bullet point descriptions and executive summaries, you need to so that you can understand what we all need to do. I'm trying to give patriots the necessary knowledge to take back our Constitution and Republic. Go to reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can read my bullet points and view the Republic Review flowchart. You can even order my executive summaries, books, and other content to understand the simplicity of what we have to do. This way, you will know what, why, and how to support the reclaiming of our Republic. Again, please take a look at my content on reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can become a part of the solution. To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process.
Okay, if you want to join in on the dialogue, you need to call 215-TOP-TALK. That's 215-867-8255.
Okay, so as we get to this point right here, and I've during the break, I went and pulled up the 14th Amendment because I'm reading this. These are Jefferson's words. And here he was clearly stating that the federal government can't do these things. However, I'm pointing out that there are two things in the Bill of Rights that do not apply to the states because this is what the 14th Amendment says. No state shall make or enforce any law which shall abridge the privileges or immunities of citizens. It doesn't say organizations. So in other words, the press as an organization. So if you are an independent reporter, you're an independent press, you go out and you find facts and you put it out there, they cannot create any laws of people, individuals putting out information. You just have to, you know, if we've got 1 million people putting out information, what's going on? This is why individual press is protected, because you have the right of speech as well as the right of conscience and so forth. All of our rights are applied to us as individual citizens, even if we're functioning as a reporter, individual reporters. However, organizational reporters, such as news agencies and the actual papers and so forth, these are organizations. They are not a citizen, as it states here, shall abridge the privileges or immunities of citizens, not of organizations. And the same thing with establishment of a church. That does not have to do with citizens. States can't, you know, make or enforce laws regarding religious expression, but they can, and they did still have organized churches. So I want to actually prove this fact that Jefferson was clearly stating that the federal government couldn't do these things, but the states could. The states, and he was just saying that the states actually reserved the right. They could, back before the Bill of Rights, encroach upon and actually pass laws that would violate, or take away your right of expression, speech, conscience, and so forth. The states had no, because they didn't have a Bill of Rights. They didn't have any negatives put upon them until the 14th Amendment. So if the light just clicked on, great, because that's the whole point here, is to put the data together for you so that you can connect the dots and you go, oh my gosh, I completely have been bamboozled into thinking that the states, and that the freedom of the press shall always be free. This is why that conversation with Eric, and I'm hoping that Eric actually tunes in today, because he's going to hear this and he's going to hear how even Jefferson said that the states still possessed at their whims, at their desires, to be able to pass these types of laws that the federal government couldn't. And moving on, Jefferson says, and were reserved to the states or the people, that thus was manifested their determination to retain to themselves the right of judging how far the licentiousness of speech and of the press may be abridged without lessening their useful freedom, and how far those abuses which cannot be separated from their use should be tolerated rather than the use be destroyed. And thus also they guarded against all abridgments the United States of the freedom of religious expressions and exercises, and retained to themselves the right of protecting the same, as this state, by a law passed on the general demand of its citizens, had already protected them from all human restraints or interferences. And he's talking about the state of Virginia. And that in addition to this general principle and express declaration, another and more special provision has been made by one of the amendments to the Constitution, which expressly declares, quote, Congress, and I like to insert federal government, the general government, shall make no law respecting the establishment of religion, or prohibiting the free exercise thereof, or abridging the freedom of speech or of the press, close quote. Thereby granting in the same sentence and under the same words the freedom of religion, of speech, and of the press, insomuch the freedom regarding the federal government and them their ability to make any laws regarding these things. If the federal government creates a law that you cannot pray, they have violated our First Amendment rights because, and that's the same thing with the states, because our religious expression is protected. So if an institution wants to allow somebody to come up and do a prayer, it's one thing if everybody just breaks out into a prayer as an organizational prayer. But it's another thing for an organization to allow an individual to give a prayer, to express their religious expressions. And anyway, so I'm sure that all makes sense, but I just want to move on. Thereby guarding in the same sentence and under the same words, excuse me, as you can tell, my throat's going out, the freedom of religion, of speech, and of the press, insomuch that whatever violated either throws down the sanctuary which covers the others arid that libels, falsehood, and defamation, equally with heresy and false religion, are withheld from the cognizance of federal tribunals. In other words, he's pointing out that they can't use the court doesn't even have jurisdiction over these things. That therefore, the Act of Congress of the United States passed the 14th day of 1798, entitled an act in addition to the act entitled an act for the punishment of certain crimes against the United States, which does abridge the freedom of the press, is not law and is altogether void and of no force. So there you go. I mean, he basically points out that this one particular act violated the First and Tenth Amendments. And so the next one, the fourth resolution, an act concerning aliens violating the Tenth Amendment. Resolved that alien friends are under the jurisdiction. This is an important one too, friends, because This proves the power of, I believe, migrating, or at least this one or the next one gets into, yeah, it's the next one, gets into migrating, that the federal government has control over the migration of citizens. Anyway, that alien friends are under the jurisdiction and protection of the laws of the state wherein they are, that no power over them has been delegated to the United States nor prohibited to them, to the United States, distinct from the power over citizens. It has been true as a general principle, and one of the amendments to the Constitution having declared that, quote, the powers not delegated to the United States by the Constitution nor prohibited to it by are reserved to the states respectively or to the people, close quote. So that's the 10th Amendment again. The Act of the Congress of the United States passed on the day, I forget what day it was, because he didn't include the day here himself, of July 1798, entitled An Act Concerning Aliens, which assumes powers over alien friends not delegated. Now, so you got to understand that there could have been aliens that were enemies that, you know, snuck in, that nobody knew who were there because they went under the radar. Alien friends were the people that, you know, were there, you know, and everybody knew that they were there. They weren't going to become citizens. They were just, you know, like emissaries, visitors, tourists, what have you. Anyway, not delegated by the Constitution is not law, but altogether void and of no force. I just want you to understand, nullification and these declarations of void and no force, it is the automatic thing that must be done. If a law is created that is a violation of the fundamental Constitution and the fundamental laws of a given state, those laws, when identified as a conflict to the fundamental laws, are void and of no force, and you are obligated to declare such. You are not, as a matter of fact, once you've identified that this is a contradiction or violation of an underlying law, you're supposed to, I mean, it is like second nature. You know, when somebody swings, you duck. When somebody passes a law like this and you can find out that, oh, this is an ex post facto law, this is void and of no force, and it is to be stricken from the books. It is a perfunctory process that has to occur. Anyway, the next resolution is the fifth resolution, and that, in addition to the general principle, as well as an express declaration that powers not delegated or reserved, another and more special provision inserted into the Constitution from abundant caution has declared that, quote, the migration or importation of such persons as any of the states now existing shall think proper to admit shall not be prohibited by the Congress prior to the year 1808. In other words, in the year 1808 is when Congress or the general government takes full cognizance and control over the migration of people. And so as I look over my shoulder, shoot, I'm basically out of time. Folks, this is why going through these resolutions, not just to prove my point, but the point of these resolutions was to unify the states in standing up against federal tyranny. This is what we have to do. We have to do what Jefferson and Madison are calling for in these resolutions. Don't believe the 10th Amendment Center and the John Birch Society or anybody trying to tell you it's about nullification. It's not. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless.
Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic? I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our Republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point where you have a profound understanding of the audit and Republic review process. This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to ReclaimingTheRepublic.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much.